Welcome to the Weekly Leadership Experience, a place for leaders to get inspired, be challenged, and grow. I am your host, Rashad Oberlander. Let's get started. Today's episode of the Weekly Leadership Experience is brought to you by my 7-day Leadership Growth Challenge. It's a free challenge that I've created, and it's delivered by email over the course of 7 days. I've created 7 compelling questions to challenge various aspects of your leadership, the way you lead, and why you lead. Go to rashadoberlander.com and scroll down until you find the 7-day leadership challenge, or look for the link in the show notes. And now, on with the show. Hello, leaders, and welcome to this week's show. Thank you for joining me today. I'm here today with Dr. Joanna Pagonis, owner of the leadership consulting firm Synogap Solutions. She has 20 years experience in leadership and organizational development, which she has gained throughout her professional and academic career. Dr. Pagonis has worked in the public, private, and nonprofit sectors and is an international speaker, having presented at Interpol conferences in the Caribbean and South America. Joanna's firm specializes in developing employee engagement and leadership strategies that will transform people into confident and capable employees that achieve excellence and are a source of strategic value. Joanna inherently believes what drives people to excellence is igniting their passion through their purpose. Giving people the forum to share and express what they love, what they are good at, and how their work aligns with the purpose and mission of the organization. Joanna is also the author of the book, Choose to Be a Leader, Others Would Want to Follow. Joanna, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be here.
So we're doing this recording over Zoom, but we live roughly in the same geographic area. You're over in Sherwood Park. I'm here in Edmonton. So we can almost wave at each other.
Yes.
Very good. But hopefully one day we can get back to doing in-person interviews and enjoying company face-to-face. For now, we are still in the midst of the pandemic. But Joanna, why don't you just start with telling us a bit about your background and what got you interested in employee engagement and leadership development?
Well, thank you. I guess it all starts, way back when, after I finished my undergrad and I was thinking about what I wanted to do for the rest of my life when I grew up, became an adult. And I thought I wanted to become a marriage family counselor, because my undergrad was in psychology. So that was the path that I was taking. And I started my master's program in educational psychology. I didn't go into counseling psych. I did educational psychology. And one of the reasons was I wanted to work with groups, because one of the things that I realized from my undergrad was that as an individual, you can focus on giving an individual the coping skills that they need to be successful. But if their environment doesn't change, then it's hard for them to really apply and sustain the things that they've learned through therapy. And so I wanted to work with groups, primarily families, because I thought that I saw a family as a close-knit, important environment that an individual lives and functions within, and sometimes can be the root of some of our dysfunctionality. And that was the path that I was taking. And then things changed in my life, and I decided I needed to move cities. I was living in Montreal. I was born and raised there. And eventually I made my way over to Alberta, and always working in the nonprofit world, designing and developing programs like on a group therapeutic level, if you will, working with at-risk youth and teams and helping kids. And the nonprofit world in that career trajectory I was on was a bit of a, soul enriching, but also not a very stable one in terms of finances. And I was on my own in Alberta and I needed some stability. And I came across it's not a funny story, but it's, that we had a kid in our program that had been arrested for drug trafficking, and I had to go to court to see if he was going to be remanded back into jail or if he was going to come back to us. And he was remanded. And so I went back to work. And as I was going back to work, I was walking through City Hall. And back then, I mean, we had the internet, but we were still posting jobs on walls within businesses, right? So I was walking through City Hall and they had all the job postings up, and I decided to take a look to see if there was anything that would interest me that would fall within my realm of experience and interest. And I saw a job for an instructional designer position with the Calgary Police Service. And I looked at it, and really all of the skill sets that they were requiring were ones that I possessed. The same skill sets that you that are required to develop programming for individuals in a therapeutic setting, you know, the skills that they need to learn, being able to apply them to impact and influence their lives, were the same skills that they were looking for in an instructional designer, but not in a therapeutic setting for families, but for police officers. And so it was a bit of a stretch for me, but it was a permanent position, and I would be making about $30,000 more a year and benefits. And so I applied and I got it. And then I started working in the corporate world and started focusing on employee development. And I realized that, you know, I stopped to think and I thought, do I want to go back to the therapeutic world? Do I still want to become a marriage family counselor? Or can I achieve the same fulfillment in terms of wanting to help individuals succeed within an environment in a corporate context? And I realized I could. So instead of working with an individual within a family context, I was working with an employee with an organizational context. And so I started to transition from developing training for technical skills in law enforcement. And that's where some of the speaking gigs from Interpol came from, because that was my in, because I had credibility within law enforcement world. So I started to move away from technical skill development to organizational learning and development. So looking, understanding, examining how individuals within organizations learn and what can organizational leaders do to support learning of their employees. And what I started to really learn was, if we can support learning through everyday work, that is one of the critical keys that we need to unlock people's potential. We can't just assume people figure out on their own how to do the job just because they come with a degree. And some people, you don't even need a degree to get a certain job, right? You need some experience. But that's not always enough to ensure the person will be successful in their position, especially when we become a formal leader. For some reason, people think that magically we'll even be more capable of understanding how to do our jobs. And I realized that that wasn't the case. And that's why I wanted to focus on employee learning and development.
Awesome. Well, that's a great, I guess, description of your background and really understanding where you're coming from and what you've kind of brought to your business now. So, you know, Synogap Solutions, actually, can you tell us a little bit about your business? And, you know, what does Synogap mean? What is there something behind that?
Thanks for asking. I know we were talking before we started recording and you asked me, probably a lot of people asked me what that means. And I said, no, you're the only one who's asked me that. So thanks for asking. Yeah. So, well, I'll start with the name. So Synogap is my last name spelled backwards. And the way I came up with that name was, you know, I was trying to come up with a name for my business when I decided to leave the corporate world and start my own company. I'm like, what do I call it? Do I call it Pagonis Consulting? You know, like, what do I call this business? And I didn't want it to be just me. I wanted to develop a big business, if you will, that could span across not just the province, but the country. And where there could be consultants who are passionate about learning and development and employee engagement and leadership development, as I am working across the province. So I didn't want it to just be me. I wanted it to be something bigger than that. But I wanted a piece of me in it. And so I was thinking and thinking. And then I realized that when it comes to learning and development within the corporate world, especially when we talk about learning organizations and what that means, sometimes we have to look at our day-to-day working context, things that we see every day, you know, the same duties and tasks that we engage in every day. Sometimes if we just stop and reflect on what we're doing, we can start to see things in a very different way, which can spark creativity, innovation. And that's when I thought, well, my last name, if it was to be spelled backwards, you know, it's something I look at every day, something I carry with me every day, like our work context. If I just stopped and reflected and looked at it a bit differently, what could I do with my last name? And if I just reversed the letters, it still sounded really nice. And I'm like, well, Synogap can also mean see no gaps. You know, part of my job is when a corporation or a company hires me to help them with their employee engagement, leadership development, I do a bit of a gap analysis. Where are you at? Where you want to be? And I work with you to fill that gap. So I'm like, see no gap, right? I'm going to work with you so we don't see any gaps, right? We're going to fill those gaps. I'm like, it has multiple meanings, if you will. And then that's how I came up with the name. And then my business, a little bit about my business. Yeah, what we do is primarily consulting, learning and development through online courses too. But really my goal is to partner with corporations, organizations, and work with them to give them the skills that they need so that after I'm gone, they're able to sustain any solution that we designed together and implemented.
Very cool. I like that. And I like that you actually have, you know, the story behind the name and a little bit about your business. So that's fantastic. Something that I wanted to ask you about, Joanna, and I mentioned this in your introduction, but it's also in your email signatures, we've been emailing back and forth, is the statement that you inherently believe what drives people to excellence is igniting their passion through their purpose. And I find that to be a very interesting statement. And I just wonder if you could expand on that for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I became a formal leader, one of the things that I realized, employee engagement is critical. It's not enough to just be satisfied with what you do. Just going into work, I don't know how many people I've spoken with, and maybe you have this experience too, where more often than not, when you talk to somebody about their job, it's usually they talk about their job in a negative way, or at the very least, it's a paycheck. I get that paycheck. I'm like, oh, what a dismal existence. Like, we spend most of our lives at work, right? And if we work out of the home, meaning like if you're a caretaker, you're the primary caregiver of your children, that's your workplace. But most likely you live with somebody who goes to work, and comes home. And the way we perceive our work impacts our well-being, our overall well-being, and our relationships with other people. If you've ever lived with somebody who's had a really tough time at their job or works in a toxic environment, they bring that crap home with them. It's hard to just turn it off at 5. You bring it home. It eats away at your soul. And so I got really good at engaging the people that were on my team, so much so that I would actually be moved. I became kind of like the person who would be brought in to help a toxic team or a team that had been labeled toxic or complex or needy or high needs or whatever. And what I realized was the individuals within these teams were just not engaged. And when I started to examine what engagement is, I realized it's more than just, like I said, being satisfied, but it was linked to feeling like you're living and fulfilling a purpose, that you're doing something of value for this organization that is meaningful for other people and therefore meaningful to you as well, that somehow you're helping other people, you're improving their lives. It goes beyond the paycheck. And so that's where the purpose comes in. So I think a leader's job is to help their employees or direct reports understand, what is your purpose? Why do you exist? Why do you want to work here? And how does that purpose align with the organization's purpose? And then I took it one step further and I said, let's align that to something you're passionate about. And I actually read an article not that long ago where they said, forget about passion. That's just hype. You don't have to be passionate about what you do. And I guess that's an opinion. And I'm not saying you have to love what you do, but, you have to like what you do. If it's going to sustain you, you want to do it for a long period of time. If you have a summer job to make a buck as you're going through school, that's one thing. But I'm talking about a career, something that you've chosen to devote your life to. So what is it that you're passionate about? What makes your heart sing, if you will? What fulfills your purpose? So I think if we can take the time to understand our own as a leader, what we're passionate about and what we think our purpose is, but then make a space in the workplace to talk about this with our direct reports, either one-on-one or in a team context. Find out what are you passionate about? What do you love to do? And then let's explore why you're here, what your purpose is, how it aligns with the organizations. And if we can unlock those two things and discover what those are, chances are they're going to be somewhat aligned. We tend to choose careers that fulfill us in some way. And they fulfill us in some way because we're passionate about that work. So if we can make space to have that conversation and bring some self-awareness to that for individuals, wow, the how you can unlock somebody's potential is outstanding. I saw people go from like 30%, 20% productivity to 70% productivity and do things that give me goosebumps. Like, I remember this one guy, he was labeled as the most complicated, high needs person nobody wanted to work with. And once we unlocked kind of like that, what his passion, his purpose was, he became the most productive, the most valuable employee of that team. And so that's where that saying comes from.
I love that. And I mean, like, you know, finding that key is so important. I mean, I really want to kind of sit on this for a few minutes because I know I asked you to come and talk about leadership development, but I think that passion and purpose, if there was a pie, like passion and purpose, I think is a fairly big chunk of what makes a good leadership development program in the end, to be honest. And like, I know there's some names out there that are talking about passion and purpose. And, you know, I mean, Gary Vee, for one, is a big proponent of doing what you love. Ken Coleman's another one who's a huge proponent of getting out there and finding what you're good at and aligning it with your passions and going and doing work that matters. Patrick Lencioni is another one who really wants to, you know, make the workplace a better environment for everyone, right? And then doing different things. And one of his newest things is called the Working Genius model, I guess it's a model. And, you know, there's these six different kind of profiles that you find out that, man, this is what really energizes me in the workplace. And you actually need these different, you know, components to make an effective workplace. But even more than that, passion and purpose, to me, like, you know, I mean, I know people, you probably know people, the listeners probably know someone in their life that has gone to university after high school for, you know, or the school system for, you know, preschool to grade 12, I don't know, you know, 12, 14 years. And then they go right from that, boom, university. And they go and they become a dentist or a doctor or a lawyer or, you know, something. And they're halfway through, or maybe they finish the first semester, or maybe they go through the 4-year degree and get to the end and go, wow, I actually really don't want to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
What do I want to do? And then they go and get an arts degree or something. You know, you know what I mean? Like,
true.
Passion and purpose to me, like, I would love to see passion and purpose being talked about. Like, it's, you know, I don't know. Maybe they can't curriculumize it enough to put it into grade school discussion, but like, our kids need to know.
Yeah. You know, actually, I came from education. My last corporate job was within the Ministry of Education, where they were, and it's very well known across Alberta that they're looking at the curriculum and redeveloping it or retweaking it and improving it, you know, because curriculum has to be evolved over time. And one of the things that they were looking at putting in was, I'll call it emotional intelligence. They didn't call it that, but looking at the power of emotions and how to leverage them. And I think within emotional intelligence, because I feel like really what I'm talking about is emotional intelligence. When I talk about self-awareness and things like that, and they're beginning to integrate that in the curriculum, which is exciting to see. And so I'm hoping through that, they can have some of these conversations. So then, like you said, kids can actually discover what that is and make better decisions for themselves in terms of their career path.
Yeah, 100%. And, I mean, I think that like what you were saying is creating a space in the workplace for these conversations to happen, because, you know, a lot of times it's kind of like just knuckle down and job done, you know. But how do you start? Where do you begin to create the space to have conversations about what are you passionate about? What drives your purpose? Like, how do we align with the company? And where does that even start?
Yeah, it starts with the leader. Absolutely. Drives me crazy how people are like, no, and work is work. We don't have time for this. No touchy-feely things. Let's just get to it. And I say, well, then you're going to hit a plateau. You're going to hit a ceiling in terms of people's productivity. I don't know how many managers have reached out to me recently and said, Joanna, you know, I thought everybody was going to start working from home and productivity would go up and things are changing and productivity is getting worse and it's not getting any better. And so I'm like, it starts with the leader. The leader first has to understand, you know, what employee engagement really is and what the role, and that they play an important role in nurturing that. So it starts there, that self-awareness on a leadership level as to what your job really is. And it's not just the management side of the job, which is overseeing systems and processes, allocating resources, ensuring you have, you know, good allocating budgets and things like that, achieving goals, all important things. Absolutely, we need to be skilled up on that. But you have another aspect of your job, which I call the leadership, which is the emotional intelligence. And you have to embrace that side. That's the emotional side of you. That's the side that needs to lead with heart, passion, and purpose. And you need to make space for that. And you need to spend some time developing that side. And so if you feel like you have a shortcoming on that side, and usually when I see leaders struggling, it's usually on the leadership side. Sometimes they struggle on the management side, but that's just usually because they don't understand how forecasting works. They don't understand all the systems in their work area and how to leverage them. But that you can be taught easily, sometimes through a course or sometimes just good mentorship. But we always forget about the leadership side. So if you that's where they struggle. So if you acknowledge, so figure out where you are. Where are your emotional? Where's your emotional intelligence? Where are you on that spectrum? And if you feel like you're not where you need to be, do what you need to do to get skilled up on that. Take courses. They're like, I even offer a course on developing your emotional intelligence and your resiliency and agility. There's so much out there. Seek it out. You can take a self-paced online course. You can join a coaching. You can join a group. You can get a coach, a corporate coach, to help you develop that. That's number one. Because if you can tap into that, it's a lot easier to then build a relationship with your employees. Because to create a space to have that conversation, you have to be able to develop a relationship with somebody. So, that's why when I join a team, when I'm asked to join a team and lead a new team, I never just start off with, let's sit down and talk about your passion and your purpose. People are going to look at me and be like, who are you? What's this? Fluff stuff. Like, let's just get down to business. Like, I have to develop a relationship with them. They need to trust me. They need to know I'm credible. They need to know that I know what I'm doing, but that I trust them too. And that happens. It happens by making time for a conversation. So one-on-ones. I'm still surprised at how many leaders don't do one-on-ones. And the ones that do one-on-ones, it's all business. The employee comes in, sits down in their office, and the manager takes 30 minutes to an hour to just, rattle off a bunch of tasks, checklist of things, and out you go. I'll see you next month, and then we'll just check where you're at with all of these tasks. They make no time for the employee to talk about them, where they're at, how are they doing, and get to know them on a personal level. So I think it starts there. Making time for one-on-ones that happen regularly and somewhat frequently, minimum once a month. If you do it more frequently than that, they can be shorter, right? They can be anywhere between 20 to 30 minutes if you're doing them more frequently. And then, take some time to, share with your employee what the responsibilities or tasks are that are coming up, giving them that information. But also giving them space, that time, like 15 minutes, you get to talk. What do you want to talk about? Or even telling them that they need to come to the one-on-one with the agenda. So let go of control. That's a hard thing for a manager to do. Let go of the control. Like actually, and I think a low risk way to do that is to tell your direct report, you schedule the one-on-ones, you have access to my calendar. Schedule them as often as you want. Like, yeah, maybe have that conversation. How often do you want to meet and how long can we do it? Make it reasonable for your schedule too. And then say, you bring the agenda. That's a little way to relinquish control and empower your employee. That alone goes a long way in developing trust with your employee and then making space to have that conversation around what is it that you're interested in? What's your purpose, right? And sometimes you don't even have to say that we're going to have that conversation. Sometimes it just happens. The employee, if you give them that time to have that conversation, you give them control of how the conversation will go. They'll start to talk about these things. And sometimes you can just say even, where do you want to go next year? Like, where do you want your career to go? And I also say another way to increase engagement and to align passion and purpose is to develop your employee for their next position. Developing them for their next position is one way to engage them the most in their current position, if that makes sense. Because you're saying to them, I believe in you. I know you will succeed. And my job is to give you the skills, the knowledge, and the permission you need to develop, to develop in a way that will prepare you for that next promotion or the next lateral move. I'm not an idiot. I don't think you're going to stay here for the next 30 years. You need to move on. We'd like to keep you in the company. So let's see where you can go within this company. Succession planning, right? So it's all linked. So we start with passion and purpose, if you will, by making a space and having a conversation through one-on-ones, which then can lead to bigger things like career trajectory, succession planning, and retaining strong talent in your organization so you're not losing them to your competitor.
Totally. I think that's a very important link between, you know, like you say, where it starts. You've got an employee and you want to connect them to what the company is doing through their passion and their purpose and align their job to kind of maximize their enjoyment, their satisfaction, and a number of different things. And it actually plays into all those different aspects of, you know, succession planning, as you point out. Just coming back a little bit to your book, Choose to Be a Leader Others Would Want to Follow, what motivated you to write that book and why the title?
Yeah. So when I decided to go back and do a PhD, go back to school after a decade, master's, and about 10, 11 years later, I wanted to go back. I think I knew that I wanted my own business, and I thought a PhD would kind of give me that credibility, at least for myself. But one of the things I wanted more experience in on an academic level was understanding how people learn through everyday work. Because I saw, as an instructional designer, I thought I designed really awesome courses. You know, I had strong subject matter expertise working with me to design these wonderful courses on leadership. And then people weren't really transferring what they were learning to the workplace. So there was a disconnect there. And I wanted to examine that. And I thought, you know, doing a PhD would give me that time to do that. And that's what I actually focused on. I thought I was going to look just on instructional design and that transfer of learning initially. But then as I was moving up in my career over the 4 years that I was doing my PhD, I realized that there was a gap in leadership development. When you move from a technical position, like an individual contributor position, to that of a formal leader, manager, there is really no training. If you're lucky, you may take a one-day course on supervisory skills, which I'll be honest, I developed some of those. And you know what? As a participant in them, even as the designer of it, when I became a manager, a leader, I'm like, they didn't really help me feel confident and capable to do the job. I'll never forget one of my first experiences was I walked in to a new workplace and people were like, who are you? And I think maybe some of your listeners can relate to this. Hi, who are you? I'm like, I'm the manager of organizational learning and development. Today's my first day. Didn't so-and-so tell you I'm coming? No. Oh, geez, I don't even have a workspace for you, but I guess I'll put you in the office in the back. Oh, that's frustrating. I had that space allocated for somebody else. Well, I'll just take it and I'll figure it out. Can you imagine? That was my first day. So I get in, there's a monitor, computer monitor. There's no keyboard. And then my boss calls me and says, I need a budgeted forecast for like a $2 million budget by the end of the week. I couldn't even access my computer, let alone did I know where I was going to find the files that I needed to forecast a budget, let alone knowing how to really forecast a budget.
Wow.
Like, yeah. And then I had 7 direct reports. And this was one of the teams that some managers found challenging in the past and didn't necessarily want to take the position. One of the reasons why I was moved into the position, it was a nightmare. And so I thought, this can't be the way managers get introduced to the position. You know, we need to support managerial learning better as an organization. Like, shame on the organization. That is horrible. You don't do that. You're setting your managers up to fail. And really they're the linchpin to your success. If they can't succeed, you will fail as an organization. So that's what I focused my PhD on. And then when I finished my PhD, my supervisory committee said, the results of your findings are critically important. You need to share this broadly. And I thought, I'll turn it into a book that hopefully I can market and sell. and so I took my PhD and I condensed it. So it's like, the book is like just under 100 pages. It's written at a reading level that anybody who has a high school diploma can understand. And it's written for really, really, really busy people that just need to get to the heart of like, what is it? What's the point I'm trying to make? And what can I do as an individual or as an organization to help managers do a better job in leading others. And that's where the book title came from, Choose to Be a Leader Others Would Want to Follow. Because although I say to organizations, you play a role in supporting leadership development, you can't just assume we're going to know what to do on our own. As an individual, we also are responsible for our own learning. And we have to make a choice every day to be that leader that people want to follow. And I've given a talk before. And the last thing that I say in the talk is I have all the audience close their eyes. And I say, imagine you're in a leadership lineup. There's you and four other leaders next to you that are considered, you know, popular and well-liked. And there's you. And in comes your team. And they get to choose the leader they want to lead them. Would they choose you? If they, be honest with yourself, would they choose you? And if you don't think they would choose you, then examine why that is. And then do what you need to do to become that leader people would want to choose. And don't be too arrogant to think that, of course, they would choose me. If you think, yeah, of course they would choose me, then find out why. And go to your leader, your followers, and ask them, hey, would you choose me? Why or why not? So that's a bit of the book.
That's a powerful question. I like that question. I might have to use that question. So we kind of talked a little bit about it before in the little bit of conversation here already. But maybe expand a little bit in terms of some of how someone gets there. I want to be that leader that others want to follow. Like, how do I get there? What do these organizations need to do to support a leader developing like that?
Yes. Okay. So it starts right away at the beginning when you hire somebody. It starts even before you hire somebody. So like examine your hiring and recruitment practices. Who are you hiring? And how are the values of the people that you're hiring aligned to your organization's values? How is that person's purpose aligned to your purpose? So start there. Make sure that the people you're hiring are a right fit for your organization. And you can use things like your organization's values, mission, purpose statement to assess that you have a good fit, suitability. Can't just be assessing people for their technical skills, but also their emotional intelligence, things like purpose and values and things like that. So it starts there. Once you hire somebody, most likely, you know, we tend to hire people that, you know, sometimes we hire people from other organizations and we move them into a formal leadership position. But more often than not, we're moving people within the company to leadership positions. And we're hiring individual contributors from the outside. So when you're hiring your individual contributors and they're joining your company, start leadership development then. Right? Leadership development doesn't have to be, like I said, all the formal management technical skills. It's about emotional intelligence. So ensure that you're giving the skills that they need to become self-aware of who they are, what their strengths are, where their opportunities of growth are, making time to find out what their career pathway is, what kind of support they need to get there, create a time to develop relationships in the workplace. Make space. So then start from the time that you hire them to find out, you know, like what their passion, their purpose is, and developing them through everyday work, right? So that when they become a formal leader, so that when a position opens up, they already have some of those skill sets. They've learned that through their manager that role modeled that for them. So then when they become a manager, they're able to display those same behaviors. So I think that's how you do it. But you may say, okay, that's great. But what do I do for my existing managers that don't necessarily have that? And so in the book, I talk about different things that you can do. How you have to support learning through everyday work. And there's ways to do that. Like mentoring is one way. Making sure that mentors are accessible to everybody in your organization. So do you have a mentoring program? How is that working? What's the processes around people accessing mentors? Who are the mentors? What skill sets do they have? Are you giving people the skills that are required to be able to be a good mentor? So I think looking at mentoring opportunities within the company is important. And then there's things that you can do to create a mentoring program. And if you don't have that skill set internally to do that, then you can hire someone like me or a consultant to come in to do some of that work. So I think mentoring is a powerful way to start developing those skills in individuals. Because through mentoring, you get the gift of time to take time out of your workday to engage in a conversation with somebody about what's working, what's not working, where are you frustrated, where do you need some support, and where do you need feedback. So that all helps with developing a leader's self-awareness. So it all goes back to self-awareness, really, at the end of the day. Giving an individual manager the opportunity to think and reflect on what they're doing, what's working, what's not, and what support do they need to improve. Mentoring can be a powerful way to do that, but there's other ways, like giving people time out of their workday to reflect, giving people opportunity to engage in professional development, to access even a coach. Coaching is another powerful tool that can be accessed to help somebody develop more self-awareness. I spoke with one coach. She said that a coach's job is to help somebody walk up the ladder of self-consciousness and self-awareness. And so anything that you can do as an organization to give your managers the ability to think and reflect around their strengths and areas of growth is the first step. And you can do that through coaching and mentoring. And then the next thing that you do is look at your succession planning. You know, what is the process to fill vacancies, leadership positions, formal leadership positions? What is that process? Is it equitable? Are you giving everybody an opportunity to compete for those positions? Is it a tap on the shoulder where only people with a certain look, feel, skill set get selected? And then once somebody gets selected for to fill a vacancy, whether that's short-term or long-term, what are you doing to support them? Are you saying, there's the position, here are 50 things you need to do by Friday? Or are you saying, we're going to structure and sequence your work in a way that's not overwhelming? So we're not going to give you an office in the back room that really isn't allocated to you with no keyboard and have you do a budget within 5 days. Like, we're not going to do that to you. We're going to make sure that you're welcomed into your workspace, that people know that you're coming before you're coming. We will allocate and structure work in a way that's not like drinking out of a fire hose. And you'll get a mentor. And you'll meet with this mentor once a week. Plus, you'll meet with your supervisor once a week where you can ask any question that you have to help you do your job better. So all of this is in the book. And it doesn't take a lot of money. It doesn't take any money. It's soft costs. These are all built into the salaries of your employees. It just takes a willingness on the part of the organization to make time to implement some of these processes.
And I mean, I think that the end goal, like any organization, any leader out there that is listening and doesn't realize the power of connecting employees' passion and purpose to what the company's doing, giving them space to do what they do best, and helping them to be better leaders, like the value to the organization is massive. So I love everything that you've said about that today, Joanna. So thank you for sharing. Last couple of questions as we wrap up here. What is one thing you know about life or leadership that you wish everyone knew?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Now I remember these were one of the questions that you were going to ask me. I think, about life and leadership. Especially over this last year, I've learned so much about myself and my own resiliency. So I think when it comes to life is, resiliency is so important, and being able to do things that we need to do for ourselves to be resilient is critical for us to succeed. I've talked a lot about resiliency in the past and developed some courses on resiliency, but not until this last year have I really had to, like, resiliency showed up and slaps me in the face every day and reminds me, how resilient I need to be. And just even before we hit record, we were talking about this new normal we're all in. And as things start to feel like they go back to normal, we get reminded very quickly that no, we're not in a new normal. Like I was telling you, that business has been rough, it's been challenging because of COVID, and things start to pick up, and then clients start to either they get sick or somebody in their family gets sick because of what's happening, and projects get postponed, right? So it's, like we need we need to develop this new level of resiliency that we've never had to have before. And I think when it comes to life, we need to acknowledge that. We need to say things are tough. And we need to find some strength within ourselves. And the way we do that is make time for yourself. Don't work yourself to the bone, because you're just going to get on that hamster wheel. You're going to get one task done, next task done, the next task done. And the tasks will just keep coming and overwhelming you. So take time out of your day and treat yourself. Really treat yourself. I just wrote a newsletter that went out this morning about we just need to take time for ourselves and treat ourselves and be compassionate to ourselves. So, you know, emotional intelligence and leading with the heart is about being compassionate towards others, but it starts with yourself first. And I think that's the whole life lesson around life and leadership. You can't be a good leader unless you can lead yourself first. And be compassionate towards yourself first, and be self-aware of what you need to survive and to thrive. And don't make excuses for it. Don't apologize for it. Just do what you need to do. And I'm learning that, like, have those boundaries and don't be afraid to say, I'm going on vacation and I'm not going to work. You know, I had one client reach out to me and I said, can I call you when I come back from holidays? I really want to commit to this time for me, you know, and guess what? The client was fine with it. The world didn't end, you know, so you need, and your followers, your direct reports, your team look closely at you as a leader. So if you don't know how to do that for yourself, don't expect them to do it for themselves, because they're going to think you're them. They're going to say, oh yeah, you want me to take time for myself. You want me to engage in self-renewal, but you don't do it yourself. So you really, at the end of the day, don't want me to do it. And guess what? That's so true. Because as a leader, I would say this for my team and I would make sure that they stuck to that, that they took their vacations and all of that. But deep down inside, sometimes I resented it. And I resented it because I couldn't do it for myself. So I think that's the life lesson around leadership that I want to share.
Awesome. When it's all said and done, Joanna, what three words do you want to be used to describe your life?
So I think fun. Just, you know, like somebody who was very optimistic and fun. You know, like, who do we want to invite out on Friday night? Joanna, because she's fun. I want to be described like that, as a fun person, you know, somebody who was lighthearted and fun. Absolutely. Somebody who had lots and lots and lots of love to give for people that were compassionate towards me too, obviously, but somebody who had lots of love, was very compassionate and really cared about other people and wanting to help other people. That's the second thing. And then I guess, you know, the third is, I think, you know, just a wonderful wife and stepmom and grandmother, like a good family person, if you will, somebody who's devoted, committed to her family, and that made her family feel very loved, I think, is the third thing.
Those are great. Love it. Joanna, thank you so much for being on the show with me today. I really appreciate it. Lots of great value and lots of things I hope people really think about and think about how they can apply in their own development and maybe in the development of people that report to them. Where can people connect with you?
Yeah, so they can, well, first of all, thank you so much, Rashad. This has been a wonderful experience. Nice and early on a Friday morning. it's a great way to start the weekend. Mm-hmm. I would say, yeah, my website. So it's sinogapsolutions.com. So yeah, sinogapsolutions, all one word, .com. If you go to my website, anything and everything you need to know about me, my company, the courses we offer, the consulting services we offer is all there. Contact information is there as well. And then LinkedIn. If you just go on LinkedIn and look, try to find me on just Joanna Pagonis. I have a business page there too, but you can find me under Joanna Pagonis. I have a Facebook business page. You can also find me on Twitter too, and Instagram under Sinogap Solutions. You can find me there too.
Awesome.
Oh, and a YouTube channel under Joanna Pagonis. So I have a lot of micro learning videos, which are called Manager's Moments. If you want quick tips, 3-minute videos around how to be a better manager, go to my YouTube channel and listen to watch the 3-minute manager moment videos that I have.
Awesome. Well, we'll be sure to check those out. For all those links, check out the detailed show notes over at rashadoberlander.com. You can find everything there and links to see Joanna and see what she's up to. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. In the meantime, stay awesome.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, would you head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, leave me a rating, leave me a review, and share this with a friend? It spreads the word and helps the podcast grow. You can also find me on social media at R.E. Oberlander. Until next time, stay awesome.